Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Cliff Bronson makes his TV return Saturday night on AMC's The Sun, A Tale of Two Wests and Two Centuries. Greenman executive producer Philip Meyer adapted The Sun from his Pulitzer Prize finalist novel, and he joins me next in an Internet Radio exclusive live from Austin, Texas. What may be the most unique episode this season, this year or recent years, unfolds next week on Underground. The main director of WGN America's acclaimed series, Emmy nominee Anthony Hemingway, explains why later this hour. Also ahead is a Fox Cable Net Mask blackout coming this weekend, Big Up on Brockmeyer, your latest classic trivia winner with the winning answer, and thoughts on the TV side of Don Rickles. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Good Friday afternoon to all of you, and welcome to the program All About Television. Great hour and change in store for you, and we invite you always to be part of the program. It's very simple. Raise your voice and pick up the phone, then dial this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is there anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is open as well. It's another way to be involved. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Our good friend from Philadelphia, Rick Webb, is already in the room. And while the program is on, you can catch others and connect them by using Facebook Timeline. Just click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. 45 degrees at the top of the hour. We'll have news notes at the bottom of the hour. But right now, joining us live from Austin, Texas, in an Internet Radio exclusive, the creator and executive producer of AMC's The Sun, Philip Meyer. Philip, thanks for joining us.
No, thanks, Simon.
Here we are, a day before your series premieres on AMC. It's your baby. It's been that way from the start, taken from your own Pulitzer Prize-nominated novel. What's going through your mind right now?
Well, it's a little surreal. Yeah, you know, it took 5 years to write the book, and then it took about 5 years to adapt the show into a book, you know, adapt it, sell it, develop it, and then finally produce it. So it feels like the beginning of something new, obviously a new series, but also it's kind of the end of a very long journey. So, yeah, it's pretty surreal.
Do you think it's been worthwhile to take all that time to go from being nominated for the Pulitzer Prize to having this show run on AMC tomorrow night?
Yeah, it has been. I was talking to Nick Pizzolatto about this, the guy who created True Detective, and he's also a novelist. And we both agreed it's because TV is like the dominant kind of form of storytelling these days, dominant long form narrative. That for and especially because it's a writer's medium, for guys like us, it's kind of hard to pass up the opportunity. So on one hand, with a novel, you really have very pure creative control. With TV, it's always a collaboration. But, yeah, for sure it was worth it.
This is a saga that, as I mentioned in the opening, spans two Westerns, really in one, and also two centuries in one. Was that the way the novel, for those who haven't read the novel, was that the way all along?
Yeah, so the novel had actually about three stories. The show goes back and forth between storyline about the 1849, 1850s, and 1915. And the book actually threw another timeline in there as well, kind of more the modern day, almost the present day. So we had to reduce the number of storylines from the book from three to two. But I think in the end we stayed pretty true to the book in terms of tone. And the fact is we ended up diverging from the book in a lot of ways just because it was, frankly, I kind of didn't want to repeat myself. You know, and in the end, if you're going to spend a bunch of years doing something, it's kind of more interesting if it's new than if you're just kind of, very perfectly adapting this work that you're basing the show on.
Yeah. When you made the deal with AMC to not just give them the rights to adapt this series for television, but also to be part of it in a major way, writing scripts, executive producing with others, being part of the collaborative process. I noticed in the press release that came out in January 2016 that you wanted to dig deeper into what you created than before. In what ways did you want to dig deep? Where did you want to take digging?
Well, I think that with a book is a very closed-ended thing, right? So, you really figure, okay, you're going to hold the reader's attention for this long, has a beginning and a middle and an end. And with a TV show, it's not necessarily closed-ended. So there are a lot of things that I left out of the book. I mean, there are thousands of pages that the book ends up being about 600 pages, and probably another 1,000 pages I left out of interesting material that just didn't quite work as well. And I think in the show, we can really dive into some of that stuff. So just a lot of stuff about the history of these people, the history of this family, the history of the main character that couldn't really make it into the book, but I think could make it into the show.
This is a book about a very unique family, and you show it from two different perspectives, from the beginning or the creation of this dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
Take this part of the West in Texas, and then you have Pierce Brosnan sort of full-blown, the elder statesman of the dynasty and so on. I'm curious about the contrast between the two and what you show in this series as we watch it from episode to episode.
Yeah, so we start with Pierce Brosnan, who plays a character named Eli McCullough, as a young man. And he's this is not giving too much away, but his family lives on the frontier in West Texas. And he's taken as a captive by Comanche Indians. And we see over the course of this first season, his development as a young man, and then as a man, his development as with the Comanches. And we're also seeing him as an older man, him as a kind of patriarch and the kind of founding father of his family. And we're seeing that how these two things, and one is a kind of tale of innocence in a lot of ways. It's, the land is very green. It's a very kind of a simpler time. And we're seeing him at kind of the beginning of the 20th century, the beginning of the modern era, the beginning of this kind of more complicated time. So we're seeing the contrast between those two things mostly, and how the kind of this young man who's forged by violence becomes this guy who's Pierce Brosnan.
The Sun, it's AMC's newest original series. It premieres with a 2-hour episode tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, and it is based on the 2014 Pulitzer Prize-nominated novel. And we've got the novelist, who's also the creator and executive producer of the series, Philip Meyer, with us live from Austin, Texas, this half hour, internet radio exclusive on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. Happy you're with us this Friday afternoon. If you have a question or a comment for Mr. Meyer, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name. We welcome guests 424 and Rick Weber from Philadelphia into the room. Another novelist who adapted his work successfully for television is my lead guest on our next episode of Monday afternoon, Tom Perata, whose show, The Leftovers, won the Peabody Award in his first season for HBO. We had him on this program 2 years ago doing season one. He'll be back with us because the third and final season premieres a week from Sunday on HBO. And also premiering that Sunday night is the sequel to the popular Starz miniseries, The White Queen. It's The White Princess. And also coming up Monday, we'll have Emma Frost, the writer and showrunner of that sequel. That's Tom Perata from The Leftovers, Emma Frost from The White Princess. Both shows happen next Sunday night, and both people will be with us exclusively. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. Talking about working with Pierce Brosnan, especially because it's been a long time since he has come back to the medium that made him famous in the first place, as Remington Steele.
Yeah, I mean, so Pierce, we got very, very lucky to get him, and Pierce had been looking to do TV. I mean, everyone kind of knows that the serious drama began to move into TV with The Sopranos, and now, I don't think it's too much of an exaggeration to say that half or maybe most of the serious drama that's getting made has ended up in TV rather than on film, which is a huge change from the days of, when James Bond was being made and went, from the 80s and the 90s. So Pierce was looking to get into TV. This project came across his lap. He'd read the book when the book came out, and we lost Sam Neill, who was our original lead. So Pierce jumped on board, and it was amazing. He's kind of an amazing guy. I mean, he actually really is James Bond. I mean, he's an amazing horseman. He's great with all the guns. I mean, he showed up on set, and one of these guys, a lot of the other actors needed training. They needed a lot of horseback riding training, a lot of training with firearms and weapons and stuff. Pierce showed up and knew how to do everything, basically. So he's super smart, super hardworking, super talented guy, and we were really lucky to end up with him.
I've heard the clips of his work on your show. last night here in New York with AMC Networks. That's the parent company of AMC, had their special preview for press and for advertising. I think everybody was really taken with the scope of the show, the look, and particularly with Bronson's performance. He brings sort of a different side of him before preceded to tell you. Obviously, he was younger when he did Remington Steele and other and of course, then James Bond in the films. But I noticed that there was a lot more ruggedness to his performance, a little bit of weariness, a little bit of, you know, I'm the head of something, as opposed to working for somebody else or sort of being on the run. That there's this sort of rugged frontier person that wants to be in charge and yet has a number of very important flaws too.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at a lot of the roles Pierce has played, they're almost, you know, like James Bond, for instance. You know, they're almost superhero roles. They're not intended to really be that realistic in a way. You know, I mean, he's a tremendous actor, and they're really, you know, those are great movies. But in this show, he plays a guy who's spent the first 60, 70 years of his life in combat. He's lost a ton of families to violence. And when we see him now, he is tired. He is getting older, and he feels like the fate possibility of his entire family rests on his shoulders. We see him as a father interacting with his grown son. We see him as a grandfather interacting with his granddaughter. We see him as a family man, and I think, you know, he and I both agree that this is probably the broadest role he's ever played in terms of, you know, the sort of like the breadth of emotion, the breadth of experience that we see this guy go through.
Now, contrast that with Jacob Lachman, who plays the young Eli. What's he like, and sort of what's the qualities that get him on the road to creating this dynasty?
Well, Jacob first is a survivor, but he's the kind of guy that whatever happens, he's going to make it through just fine, even when the people around him don't, even when he loses his whole, we're going to see this guy lose one family, get adopted by another, lose that family. And Jacob's the kind of guy, you know, he plays this young guy, the young Eli McCullough, who's always going to be the last man standing. And so he's just one of these people who, even though he's physically not an enormous guy, he has enormous mental strength, enormous emotional strength, and he's very, very, very confident. We see him very quickly adapt to the ways of the Comanche tribe, the Comanche nation, and this, you know, which are all based on kind of real events and real people. So, I mean, if anything, Jacob's a survivor.
What's been the easiest part of the process to go from being a novelist to being a creator of a television series, adapting your own work as opposed to doing something somebody else's deal? And what's the toughest part to give the contrast?
Well, the easiest part by far was just writing the scripts. Because in the end, you know, writing is writing, and scripts are much shorter than novels are. And scripts are also not the final product, right? They're kind of a blueprint for other people to act on, for to direct other people with, right? So writing the scripts was by far the easiest part, and the hardest part was everything else. I mean, you know, it was like drinking in, it was like information through a fire hose the whole time. I'd never been on a TV set, and all of a sudden I'm producing the show. I mean, the production was both intense and brutal. We were essentially shooting, kind of like you said earlier, we're almost shooting two TV shows at the same time. We're shooting this 1915 early South Texas stuff. We have cars and horses. And then we're shooting the stuff in, you know, basically the late 1840s with all these Native American actors. And, you know, it was just, it was an enormous quantity of work. It was like 20-hour days straight for 5 months, and we were working in the heat. And it was difficult. I would say the other difficult part for a novelist is you realize that for anything to get done, you have to convince about 20 or 30 people of your vision. Because once people sign on to your project, their jobs depend on the work you do. For the novelist, you know, you write a book, and if no one likes it, fine. If everyone loves it, equally fine. But with a show, because you're sort of carrying the careers of so many other people by the success or failure of your show, you really have to get a buy-in from everyone the whole time for every kind of creative decision you make. And that was hard. Yeah, that's a lot of work.
Well, in the end, how did you get everybody, your fellow executive producers and directors and so on, and the cast to buy your vision? Because after all, you created in the first place.
So, I mean, we have a pretty careful vetting process for who we would bring on the show. And for the most part, you know, 99% of the people who worked on the show, they'd read the book. By then, they'd read the scripts. They were deciding to work on the show because they believed in the vision. They essentially believed in my vision for the show. So a lot of the work was kind of done ahead of time, and then it was a question of, okay, man, you got this opinion. Why don't you explain it to me? You think we should be doing it this way? And it was just, you know, again, with a book, you spend about 99% of your time actually generating creative work, generating creative output. And in Hollywood, you spend maybe 5% of your time doing creative work, and the other 95% is getting folks on board. So the first step really is having a big vision to begin with, and then as people come on, they know what they're getting into. So that does have to work for you. And then after that, it's just a question of being a good listener and being super respectful of people, looking people in the eye. And, it's like you're trying to come to a consensus necessarily, but you're trying to make sure that everyone feels heard.
This is also a series that deals with two aspects of the West involving people of color. One is the Latino or Spanish experience. The other is the Native American experience. What was it like to tie the two together, and what was it like also in terms of trying to accomplish inclusion, diversity, both among the cast and also your crew?
Yeah, I mean, so it is always more work to find, you know, talented actor. It's a lot of work to find talented actors, period. And then it's more work when you start meeting specific requirements of them, such as they have to be Native American, they have to be white, they have to be this color, that color, or whatever. But we set a very strict standard for ourselves that our Latino characters were going to be played by Latinos, and that our Native American actors were going to be characters were going to be played by Native Americans. So it took extra time. We had to work extra hard. You know, we reached out to our Comanche community in Lawton, and we kind of had a lot of Comanches came down from Oklahoma to participate as actors in the filming. We had actors coming down from Montana, actors coming over from New Mexico, every place there's large Native American populations in the U.S. So it's just extra work, but, you know, frankly, at this point, it's sort of a moral imperative to do it that way. So, and I think we knew that going in, and AMC knew that going in, and they were super helpful about that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, America really is, A, it's kind of a melting pot. B, you know, when you grow up, especially in the East Coast, you have a sense that, you know, we're fundamentally this Anglo country, you know, that we're a country that comes from England fundamentally. But that's not really true. You know, the Spanish beat the English to North America by about 100 years. The Native Americans have been here for 15,000 years. But this idea that America is kind of a from England or an Anglo country, we sort of like rewrote those people out of the history. So in some ways, the show, we make a pretty strong attempt to tell the history as it really is, which is absolutely fundamentally a Latino history in many, many ways. And it's also a Native American history.
You're hearing Philip Meyer. He is the author of the New York Times bestseller and Pulitzer Prize winning novel, a Dutch Pulitzer Prize nominee novel, excuse me, of 2014, The Sun, which tomorrow night becomes AMC's latest original series. And it will premiere with a 2-hour episode at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Philip Meyer joins us live from Austin, Texas this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Good to have you with us wherever you are listening across the country, around the world here on BTR. And if you have a question or comment, don't be shy. Bring it in. Here's the number. 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 for game, guest 424, Rick River from Philadelphia, still in the room. This Friday on our program, there's a brand new series that premiered a few weeks ago. It's in English on Fusion, it's in Spanish on Univac, both networks owned by Univision. It's called Outpost. It's the first series effort from a new part of Univision called Storyboard Entertainment, which is doing all sorts of shows both for their networks and for other places. And it's a program that's very unusual in the news magazine area because it involves both regular correspondents and guest contributors. And one of those guest contributors will be my lead guest, next Friday. She is a celebrated actress who made her mark first in the Oscar-nominated movie Tango. Also went into the Motorcycle Diaries, made her TV mark with Jennifer Garner opposite her for a couple of seasons on Alias on ABC, then in recent years on The Strain on Fox. I'm talking about Mia Maestra. She plays a very interesting guest correspondent role on Outpost, and we'll hear her next Friday. Interview exclusive right here. Mia Maestra on Tomorrow will be televised. Philip, did you do the program, because the show is based, the novel was based in Texas, and the series based there as well, did you do all the filming in Texas?
Yeah, we sure did. And, you know, we got lucky, the government of Texas, and we were considering shooting the show here, and they threw us a bunch of money, which kind of helped AMC, you know, go that way, because a lot of stuff is filmed, you know, I mean, half the TV you see ends up being filmed in Canada because the film incentives there are so good. And then, of course, New Mexico has good incentives, too. So it was great to film it in Texas. We used an all-Texas crew. You know, the backdrop for the book is absolutely the backdrop for the show, and I think that gives a kind of sense of authenticity and flavor that we wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
What do you want this series to say about America now, or about how America has grown up to where it is now?
So I think that for obvious reasons, we're all under the impression that the country's never been more divided than it is now. And that's not actually the case. I mean, when you see how violent our history actually is, and you see how bad things really used to be, it makes you realize that there actually is hope for today. And I think that we have a tendency, the reason we think things are so bad right now, you know, whether you like the current president or you dislike him, whether you dislike the current president, you like the previous president, rather. The reason we think things are so bad today is because we don't actually study our own history. We don't actually know our own history. We don't actually know how kind of bad and bloody things used to be. I mean, the show focuses in the 1915 storyline. During a time in South Texas history in which about 5,000 Tejanos, 5,000 Latinos were by Texas Rangers, Anglo white sheriffs, and very wealthy white ranchers. And this is a time that it's gotten swept under the rug, for instance. And we also don't realize that the time of the frontier, especially the Texas frontier, between the white settlers and the Comanches or the Apaches, was really an insanely violent time, that every inch of the American West was fought over. Every inch was someone you know, killed and was bled there, you know, so that our European ancestors could take this land. And until we sort of focus on the violence and the sort of the amount that we were divided in our past, we don't really know. We won't really know how to fix ourselves now. So I hope that's what people take away from this, which is there actually is hope, but there's only hope if we're actually honest about where we come from.
If AMC gives you a second season based on how this one does, how do you want to expand things?
Yeah, well, I think we'll move. If AMC gives us the second season, we'll just move a couple years forward in each timeline. But if we get more than that, we're going to start jumping decades in the show pretty aggressively. So eventually, the show is going to move into the present day. Eventually, we're going to age Pierce Brosnan out of the show because his character will essentially die of old age. And we'll see the people who are kids now in the show become adults, and we'll see the people who are kids now in the show become the kind of heads of the family. So we're going to require, we have very big, ambitious ideas for the show that's going to require many changes of actors as we move forward in time and history. So, and all the actors are aware of this. They're aware going in this case. Pierce knows he's kind of be on the show for 3 years, and then we'll jump forward in time and kind of have an entirely new cast. So
The Sun, based on the New York Times best-selling novel and Pulitzer Prize-nominated novel, comes to AMC in a series for the first time tomorrow night, 9, 10 Eastern and Pacific Time. Check your locals where AMC is in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.amc.com. That's www.amc.com. Novels, creator, executive producer of The Sun, Philip Meyer. Philip, thank you for joining us today. Good luck with the series. You, Pierce, all the cast and crew, and hopefully tomorrow night is the beginning of not just a great run, but a long run, too.
Thanks, Simon. Appreciate it.
You got it. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend. All the greatest.
Okay, take care.
Phil Meyer, the creator executive producer of The Sun on AMC, joining us live from Austin, Texas. More tomorrow will be televised, including our newest classic trivia question of the week winner, after some fine words from the people at Audible.com. Al Borland has a new book out. It's called Nevertheless. And you don't have to go to a bookstore to catch it. You can hear it with him narrating with a trial subscription to Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information with over 180,000 titles to choose from. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. So if you sign up at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised, that's audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audio book and a one-month travel service. And that book could be Nevertheless by Alice Rowland or something else as well. Remember, the service is great because Audible.com is from Amazon.com, so the customer service definitely top of the line. So give sound a try, the kind of sound that Audible.com provides, and see if it can transform the way you hear the world. AudibleTrial.com/televised. That's AudibleTrial.com/televised. And now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week, and we have a winner, the first one in several weeks. And that winner is Leah Koukouris of Denver, Colorado. And Leah, in the near future, is going to get the DVD set of Season 3 of 30 Rock. Here's the question we posed 2 weeks ago and repeated this past week. What Oscar-winning actress played the housekeeper on the TV version of The Courtship of Eddie's Father? Well, that person was Michiki Umeki, who won the Academy Award as Best Supporting Actress in 1957 for a performance in Sayonara. By the way, the Best Supporting Actor performance of that year was also from that film, from TV comedian-turned-actor, Red Butt. On the Quest for Eddie's Father TV series, as we mentioned earlier, Bill Bixby played Eddie's father, Brandon Cruz was Eddie, and Umeki played Mrs. Livingston, the housekeeper, always having a great stage word for both people. And incidentally, Umeki won both the Golden Globe and an Emmy nomination the first season for that role. So our trivia question answer is, Michiki Umeki played the housekeeper, Mrs. Livingston, on The Quest for Eddie's Father, which ran on ABC from 1969 to 1972. And once again, congratulations to Leah Koukouris of Denver, Colorado, for giving us that correct answer, and she was first to do it, so she wins the Season 2-3 DVD of 30 Rock on your way this coming week. Thanks, Leah, for playing. Thanks to all those who tried and didn't get the correct answer. Keep on playing. We'll have another classic trivia question for you on Monday's show. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your full name and address, because if you're first with the correct answer, you might win, and you might win a prize. So give it a try. And if you unfortunately can't tune in tomorrow, don't hear the question, don't worry. I will post it Tuesday morning on my Facebook page and at Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, you got to be in to win. So give it a go. And once again, Leela, congratulations for playing. And the 30 Rock Season 3 DVD set is on its way to you. You are listening to The Robbie Televised. We are the program all about the two. We're with you Mondays and Fridays at this very hour, right here on Blog Talk Radio, 45 degrees at the top of the hour. Once again, coming your way on Monday's program, we will have novelist turned creator executive producer of The Leftovers, the Peabody Award-winning series on HBO, which next weekend will start its third and final season on that channel. Novelist turned creator executive producer Tom Pirano will join us. We had him in the first season before he won the Peabody. He will be back with us for a second go-round. Also, Emma Frost, the writer and showrunner of Stars is the White Princess, also premiering on April 16th. That is a sequel to the popular miniseries from a couple years ago, The White Queen. Tom Pirano from The Leftovers, Emma Frost from The White Princess, both live with us next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And coming up a week from today, celebrated actress Mia Maestro, who is involved with the brand-new series Outpost, which is now available on Sunday nights on Fusion TV in English and Univox in Spanish, both Univision-owned networks. Mia Maestro will join us live as our lead guest next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. When we come back, news notes. And if you're a Charter Spectrum subscriber, you better listen up. And then celebrated director Anthony Hemingway, Emmy nominee last year for American Crime Story, The People with O.J. Simpson. He's also executive director of Underground, now in his second season on WGN America. And there's a very special, very unique episode coming up this Wednesday night. We will find out why when Anthony Hemingway joins us live from Los Angeles after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month. and growing. It's your home for Round Trip with Renee and Kim. It's unlike any travel program you can find on radio or television. Get on the Round Trip with Renee and Kim once a month right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, you can get the best of BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com and also another BTR shows anytime you like on Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or order it online. Welcome back to Tomorrow Be Televised, second half of our program for this Friday afternoon of April 2017. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. And live, you're with us. Another great guest coming away this half hour. If you have a question or comment, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us on Blog Talk Radio. You'll see our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Guest 424 on Rick Road, Philadelphia, is in that room, which you can find on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Also coming up near the top of the hour, some thoughts about the TV side of Don Rickles. And I got news for you. He did one show before he died yesterday of kidney failure in Los Angeles. And we'll tell you about that also during our remarks. And that will come your way at the close of the program. Anthony Hemingway from Underground American Crime Story joins us from Los Angeles after these news notes. If you're a Charter Spectrum cable customer in New York City, Los Angeles, or in between, you may find FX, Fox Sports Net, National Geographic, and other Fox-owned channels blacked out by the end of this weekend. Charter and Fox's cable net division have stalemated on efforts to reach a new carriage agreement. If a deal doesn't happen tonight, Fox would trigger the blackout, impacting more than 16 million subscribers. Fox's regional sports services also would go dark during the situation. However, the situation that we're talking about does not involve Fox broadcast stations or Fox News Channel and Fox Business Network, which are all under separate agreements. New contract discussions have been held between Fox and Charter Spectrum over the last 8 months. And obviously, we'll have an update for you on Monday's program. Criminal Minds will return for its 13th season on CBS. Still to come, a call on keeping the spinoff Beyond Borders around for a third season. And now a quick up as an update. We follow up on guests and topics of previous programs. And this up note deals with Monday's guest, Brockmire creator and executive producer Joel Church Cooper. His series, adapted from a Funny or Die short video, received rave reactions from TV critics and viewers Wednesday night, plus the green light from IFC for a second season in 2018. What's more, Funny or Die has agreed to program an entire night of original content every week on IFC, starting this fall. More details on this project are forthcoming. And that's news notes and a quick up for today. Well, in a moment, we should be joined by Anthony Hemingway, the Emmy Award-nominated executive producer of American Crime Story, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, and Underground, now in its second season on WGN America. This Wednesday night, Underground will present what may be not only its most unique episode of its two-season run, so one of the most unique episodes this season, maybe this year, maybe of recent years. It involves one of the newest characters in that series, Harriet Tubman, the founder of the Underground Railroad, played by Aisha Hines. Well, a lot of people are already thinking could be a major Emmy nominee for Best Supporting or Best Actress in a Drama. In this particular episode, which will be shown 2 hours earlier than normal, usually Underground is on at 10 o'clock Eastern Pacific Time on WGN America, but this time at 8 o'clock, it's basically a one-woman show. That's right, a one-woman show. For the entire hour, plus, it will be Hines playing Harriet Tubman in a very unusual setting, and Hemingway directed the episode. So once again, we are awaiting Anthony Hemingway to come on the program. Anthony, if you hear people at WGN America hearing us, give us that ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906, and we will get you on the air. And once again, that episode of Underground will be going on at a special time next Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. And because of the importance of the episode for WGN America, it will be replayed shortly after 9 o'clock and shortly after 10 o'clock on both coasts, Eastern and Pacific Time. Well, as I said, we are waiting Anthony Hemingway to join us. We expect him any moment live from Los Angeles. He may be held up by something, but I understand that he is trying to get on. So, Anthony, give us a call, 646-652-2906, at 646-652-2906, and we will get you on the air as soon as we see you light up on my Blog Talk Radio screen. And once again, I want to remind you that coming up Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll have our second visit with Tom Perata, the celebrated author and now executive producer of The Leftovers, the acclaimed HBO series with with Damian Lindelof that won the Peabody Award 2 years ago. We had him on the show originally during season one. Season three begins next Sunday night on HBO, and it's the third and final season, and a lot of people who've seen those episodes think it's the best yet. Also coming up, we have Emma Frost. She is the creator and showrunner of The White Princess. It started this new miniseries spinoff of its miniseries a couple years ago, The White Queen. And Emma Frost is the creator, the writer, and the showrunner of that series, which also premieres on April 16th on Starz, which now is owned by Lionsgate. So we'll have Tom Perata and Emma Frost joining us. That's next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, the New Pacific, both Internet Radio exclusive interviews right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And by the way, coming up also in future weeks on the program, we can tell you that coming up on April 21st, we have our talent already set for that. Nat Geographic Channel is going to be launching its first scripted series later this month. It's called Genius, and every year it will focus on a different scientific genius. And the first one is going to be, I believe, Isaac Newton, and playing the role, I believe, is for Jeffrey Rush. And we will have the writer and co-executive producer of that program, Noah Pink, with us, and that person will be our lead guest. Also, for the first time ever, we will showcase Viceland. It's the network that replaced H2 last February by Vice and A&E Networks. And we'll showcase its latest original series that premieres near the end of the month. I had a chance to see it earlier this week here in Brooklyn. It's called Beerland. It's about the search for unique craft beers all over the country, starting in Santa Fe, New Mexico. We'll have an exclusive interview with the host, who is also an entrepreneur of beer. She's the founder of Golden Road Brewing in Los Angeles, Mae Gill. So we'll have Noah Pink from Genius premiering, I believe, on April 25th on Nat Geographic, and Mae Gill from Beerland premiering, I believe, April 27th on Viceland, which both are available on cable and satellite all over the country. They'll both be with us. That's April 21st right here. That's 2 weeks from today on Tomorrow. We'll be actually 2 weeks from Friday on Tomorrow. 2 weeks then, right, 2 weeks from today. I was right the first time. There you go. 2 weeks from today right here on Tomorrow will be televised. So, again, we are awaiting Anthony Hemingway from Underground and American Crime Story to join us. Again, Anthony, hear my voice. If somebody from WT America or your public people, give us the ring, 646-652-2906. And as soon as you do, we will put you on the air. Well, so what we will do, while we wait for Anthony, we're going to go forward with what we thought we were going to do toward the end of the program, but we'll do it now. And that's some thoughts about Don Rickles. Some people called him Mr. Warmth. Some people called him the Merchant of Venom. And many people over the last 48 hours have called him the greatest comedian of his kind, the insult comedian. Someone who can insult big, small, celebrated people and get away with it because everyone who was insulted came away with love and respect for the opportunity. As you know by now, Don Rickles passed away early yesterday at the age of 90. He was going to be 91 in May from kidney failure at his home near his home in Los Angeles. When it came to television, Rickles had two levels of success. When it came to appearing on shows as an actor or a comedian, whether it was The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson or lately with Jimmy Kimmel Live, and Jimmy, of course, was, if you saw Jimmy Kimmel Live last night, he basically broke the format, and he was extremely sad, crying all over the place and talking about Rickles, his wonderful friendship with him over the last few years, whether on variety shows or even as an actor on all sorts of dramatic shows and comedy shows, when it was a one-off appearance, he always managed to let you know how great he was as a comedian. He always had the insult ready. He was a master at improv, really improvising. You saw it all over the place, particularly when he was on talk shows. And no matter what the form was, he always had the zinger. He always had the insult. And he never, never played favorites. He was the diverse of insult comedians. Whether you were African-American, Latino, Asian, Native American, or Middle Eastern, he always had a zinger for you. He was always ready. And if it felt like you repeated it twice, never felt that way. He was one very special comedian. When it came to television series, however, Rickles was not so fortunate compared to what he did in film, compared to what he did in nightclubs, and compared to his other side of television. A pilot he did for CBS didn't go beyond the pilot stage. His first series, a variety show with Pat McCormick inside on ABC, lasted a year. A show that was a sitcom, The Don Rickles Show, where he played opposite Lisa Sorrell as his wife, family-oriented sitcom, lasted half a season. Ran off of this season, didn't last too long. He later said afterward that that particular format, the situation comedy, was not suited for him. However, his longest-running series was a sitcom, and maybe, just maybe, if NBC had treated it better, would have run quite a long time. The song I'm talking about is CPO Sharky from Aaron Rubin, the brain behind the Andy Griffith Show, and it was Rick Rose really in his element, in part because he did serve in the armed forces before he became a comedian. He plays a top-notch officer who is surrounded by troops he's training, surrounded by brass, and how he gets into the thick of things, sort of the modern-day Sergeant Boko, but more on the insult side. It was a funny show. Rubin was put a great team together to make it happen, and Rick Rose was marvelous. And it had not been for a constant switching of its time period, first on Wednesday nights in season one, and then Friday nights on season two, that show probably would have run 3, 4, 5 years. It had a following, and Rick Rose really enjoyed the show, thought it was some of his best work anywhere in television. He later on did Daddy Dearest for Fox with Richard Lewis, nice pair, but didn't last too long. However, here's something you might know. Here's something you might not know. Before he passed away, Rick Rose taped another television series, something different. It wasn't a sitcom, it wasn't a drama. It was a talk around a table show called Dinner at Dawn. He did it under the tutelage of the AARP. 10 episodes, they were all shot before he passed on. The good news is we're going to find a way to see that show, and hopefully we will see it at some point. AARP has not put together a place for it yet, but we will keep you posted. I'll have more about Don Rickles at the end of the program, but right now, joining us live in Interradio Exclusive in Los Angeles, the Emmy-nominated executive producer and creator of American Crime Story, The Super Show, Jay Simpson, and now underground his second season on WWE America, we welcome back to the program Anthony Hemingway. Anthony, welcome back. Anthony, are you there? All right, hold on. We'll try again. Let's see if he's on right now. Anthony Hemingway, are you there? Hello? Let me try one more time, everybody. Apologize for what may be a sound breakdown. Let's try it again. Let's see if he is now on. Anthony Hemingway, are you there? Okay, for some reason, I'm not getting him on the line. Anthony, call back if you hear me. Same number, 646-652-2906. And we'll get you on ASAP. And I apologize to you and everybody for the sound breakdown. Let me just try one last time on this line. Let's see if we got him now. Anthony Hemingway, come on in. Hello? For some reason, we are not getting him. Anthony, call back if you hear me. I'm sorry I'm not hearing you. Call back one more time. We'll get you on the air. I really apologize for this. We did the sound check earlier with one of your associates. Worked out great. Don't know what is popping up here. All right. I'm seeing something up. Let's see if we finally get it. We'll try it one more time. Bear with everybody. All right. Anthony Hemingway, come on in. Not popping. All right. We're going to try to get Anthony back on the line. Anthony, hear me? Give a call back, 646-652-2906. Or these are chat, some of these are chatting, let us know what's going on, and we will get him on the air. Let me just continue with the Don Rickles thought. I'm always ready to wrap it up. As I mentioned, Don did take Dinner at Dawn's 10 episodes before he passed away yesterday morning from kidney failure at the age of 90, and AARP, which produced the shows, is now trying to find a distribution outlet, and of course, we will keep you posted. One of the things that Rickles was known for was saying something at the end of his concerts. And I thought it might be nice to, in part, give Rickles the last word. All right, let's see if Anthony Hemingway is on the line. We will get to that Rickles comment, I promise you. All right, Anthony, are you there?
Yes, Simon, how are you?
Fine. Hey, thank you. Happy to have you with us live from Los Angeles. And again, congratulations on both American Crime Story, but also on Underground's second season. It's doing sensational.
Thank you. I love the support. I appreciate you.
So tell us about the episode on Wednesday night. I mentioned earlier that this may be not only the most unique episode of this series, but maybe one of the most unique episodes of any series this season, this year, or recent years.
Yeah, I'm so thrilled. This episode is literally one of a kind. We are breaking format. from the typical television structure. It's very theatrical. It's almost like we're doing an episode on stage, where Harriet Tubman is giving a one-woman show, basically her TED Talk of the 1850s, where she's encouraging and trying to inspire a group of like-minded abolitionists to really continue to free people. And it's just one of those things that's really beautiful for me. You know, there's a quote that I love, which is, the most important story in your life is the story you tell yourself. You know, the reality that we create today determines our outcome and success of tomorrow. And so Harriet is here, you know, ringing a bell loudly and sharing her story, her humanity. We get to peel the layers more and so beautifully than we've ever seen or heard of Harriet Tubman's story ever, I think, in history. It's definitely not taught in school, and we're just so used to the one-dimensional pictures we've seen of her and just kind of this idea of who this person is. And we get to see her and meet her three-dimensionally, and it's just really awesome and exciting to be a part of it, especially where we are today. I think, you know, we at Underground are change agents that are constantly trying to figure out how to reflect the world we live in and do it in a way where we are, you know, promoting positivity, and the images that we put on screen, you know, need to evoke, you know, great character and strength and just awareness and with the charge that really is helping us kind of drag the past into the present. And so it parallels where we are now. You know, the end of the episode, when you see it, Harriet breaks form again and looks directly into the lens and gives us this call to action that we all need. So it's just amazing. I had so much fun doing it. Aisha Hines is a beast. Misha Green and Joe Pekaski, who really created this idea for us to do it, once they started realizing and finding the research that in the 1850s, Harriet was risking her own life to go out and talk publicly and share her life and her story. And so it was something that was found that was exciting, and that was therein to give like kind of this TED Talk of that period. So I'm excited for everyone to see it. It's so different, you know, it's different for our show. I think this season we had from the outset of season one, and as you remember from the pilot, we wanted to be bold. You know, it was a decision that I wanted visually even to, from the first frame, to definitely defy what anyone thought they were coming to see, because we're not here to give a history lesson. You know, we are not interested at all and have never been wanting to take anyone on a tour in a museum, you know, versus while we're in this experience and in this point in history and this narrative, we want to take the pictures off the wall and allow people to live in it and experience it and be affected by it and to learn from it. And so that's what we're doing. So this year we got bolder, you know, we are doing a lot more cinematic work and just changing the game and revolutionizing television. So I'm excited. And I'm excited to see how everyone receives it.
How is everybody involved in making an episode like this, where you have to, for 60 minutes or more, and this program runs past 60 minutes, how do you keep, A, the actor engaged in Asia? How do you keep the audience engaged with how you portray on camera to make this visually come alive? It's like a double. It's really a double, even a triple challenge. It's a challenge on her. It's a challenge on you. And it's a challenge on your crew, and of course your writers, Misha and Joe, to bring this whole thing come alive and engage the viewer from start to finish.
Yeah, I mean, it honestly was something that was a little daunting at first. Even when we were just talking about the idea, it was like, how are we going to imagine one full hour of just one person talking and everyone stays captivated and engaged? And, you know, once you realize and you kind of relax and throw away the anxiety and whatever fears you try to come in and distract what can happen or the possibilities of what can happen, you know, the answer is there. And that answer was just in the spirit of Harriet Tubman, because what she stood for, who she is, and what she shared, I think something within her, everyone gets to see themselves. And it's relatable. And it's definitely something that I think does have this universal reach. But it's just the idea of, one, letting go of all your faculties of knowing any skill that you have to try to, I think, approach this from some place that was unnecessary. Because for me, as I'm thinking about it and reading it, I initially started to go to this space of, okay, what can I do with the camera to keep this entertaining or engaging? I don't want anyone to get bored or get lost. And I had to realize that I had to surrender and completely let Harriet be the star of this thing and not, you know, distract from it or detract from it even. And so it was something that we all had to then get behind and be confident with it and just believe in it. And everyone was engaged. We only had 3 days to shoot the episode. So it was something that we all were just, you know, one, making sure we had the time to really give it what it needed because we did not want to do a disservice to the legacy or the spirit of Harriet. And, you know, just with only 3 days to shoot this puppy, you know, there was a moment of just kind of, oh, wow, especially for Aisha. But she's such a smart and talented and, you know, faithful person that she welcomed the challenge as much as we all did. And we all went in it together, you know, from the first day before shooting, you know, before she came to set, I went into her trailer and wrapped my arms around her and prayed with her because I wanted her to feel safe and comfortable in exploring what we were about to do and this whole task at hand. And so the first 2 days were all featuring and focusing on her and to be able to give her the time to play and to explore and get lost in the performance of this. And it was something that was really enjoyable. I honestly have to say, you know, the fears of the challenges that we thought we were going to have, you know, it was something that was so rewarding in accomplishing it and being and succeeding at the same time. And that was just a great thing. And you know, I can't say enough how happy and excited I am about the episode. It's just, it elevated me as an artist. And, you know, I found things. I've always been the person that welcomed any challenge. So I think in the heat of those moments is where, you know, I think your truest instincts come because you don't have time to deliberate or to think about it too much. You have to react and move. Because there's no time to sit around and talk about it. But it is something that's definitely revolutionary and hasn't been done before. And it was something that we all learned from.
You're hearing Anthony Hemingway, the Emmy Award-nominated director and executive producer of American Crime Story, The People vs. O.J. Simpson last year on FX, and Underground, now in its second season, Wednesday nights on WGN America, which this coming Wednesday will present a very unique episode with Aisha Hines in a really a one-woman performance as Harriet Tubman. The program will be running at a special time Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific on WGN America. It will be repeated several times throughout the night. And he's with us live in Los Angeles, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York to live here with us on this Friday afternoon. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04. My name, Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, is still in the room, along with guest 424. The critics who have looked at the second season Underground all are uniform about this, Anthony. It has taken a gigantic leap up. Not just in the quality of the performances, not just the quality of Nisha and Joe and everybody else's writing, but just the way, the whole pace of the show, and the way the show is evolving.
I'm thrilled that that reaction is happening and everyone's receiving it because it is fully something that doesn't, you know, it's not lost on me at all. Of the importance of it, how necessary it is. And it was definitely one that required a lot of brain damage and blood, sweat, and tears going into it. And it was really a joy doing it. As stressful as it was, I had an absolute awesome time and experience with it. It motivated me and encouraged me, you know. So I'm glad that it's transcending and it's coming off the screen because it should be.
Is WGN America doing anything special in terms of limiting commercial breaks or doing other things so that, you know, as much of the audience sees this show. I know they're doing, of course, the replays. I was wondering if in the episode itself, they've limited the commercial breaks, let's say, so, or they've clipped them so that you get more of the episode, let's say, in one shot, given it's an hour and it really is a very intense episode.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly to all that they've got up their sleeve, but I do know that they've added another time slot. We will actually start airing at 8 p.m. on this night. So there'll be two, like, I think it'll go 8, 9, 10, and 11, I believe. So there'll be more viewing and showings on this particular night. So hopefully people will go to bed early and will be able to get it and see it before they go to sleep.
And that really has to be a testament to how powerful this episode is, but also the show overall. And it's the first time, by the way, that WGN America has put an original series, whether it's Outsiders or Salem or Manhattan, or your show on at 8 o'clock, so that an entire family audience can watch.
Yeah, you know, they've been supportive from day one, and that's been great. It's just, when you think you're in a space or a climate where no one wants it, and for them to take the charge and the challenge and be excited about wanting to do this story and this material and getting behind it and really allowing us to breathe into it the way that we feel is so right and it is great, because I can't say enough how exhilarating this opportunity has been for me as a filmmaker. You know, it's elevated me. I'm having the time of my life right now, especially coming out of so many great material that I've been a part of. It's awesome, you know, and I'm happy to see the love and passion even that everyone else is bringing into this. You know, my art of storytelling, everyone else's art of storytelling is really aligning and is in sync. And I think everyone is recognizing the need for us all to really come together and get behind material and work like this. So it's beautiful. You know, we're getting to really reflect everyone's humanity every day in all its variations, complexities, complexions, and transcending, you know, to everyone across the world, especially those who don't get to have their stories told. I'm loving these opportunities. Underground has definitely given me that opportunity, and I'm doing other shows and developing other material at the same time. So I'm loving this moment in my life right now where I feel like it's really serving a purpose and having meaning, and it's being effective, because why do it when you can't really walk away with feeling proud about what you do and knowing that there's a legacy behind what I'm doing that I can really stand behind and be very proud of.
What is happening for you after this? What shows are you developing? And is there a possibility you may be back on American Crime Story, either the second season that they're doing on Hurricane Katrina or the third season that they're doing on Gianni Versace?
I just wrapped, I'm in post right now, as we speak, on a pilot that I just finished for USA called Unsolved, which is, you know, investigating the murders of Christopher Wallace and Tupac Shakur. Finishing post on this pilot right now. We are in conversations about the next season and seasons of American Crime Story, so that should follow later this year. And at the same time, having great opportunity of developing other really beautiful stories that I have been passionate about before. So it's a great time right now. It's busy. It's leaving me no time to sleep, but, you know, I'm okay with that because I'm happy about what I'm doing.
I did want to make one point. As you know, the Peabody nominations came. The Peabody finalists were announced earlier this week. A lot of people, including myself, thought that both American Crime Story and Underground would be slam dunks to at least be finalists, if not winners. And that did not, unfortunately, happen. And it shows, A, the quality of competition that happened, also the fact that there was a lot of news and documentary and podcasts in particular that were in there among the 60 finalists. But I do want to say, Anthony, that while I'm personally disappointed that both shows did not make the cut, I hope next year they will. And I hope Underground next year becomes an Emmy Award nominee. This fall, Underground, is going to finally get some Emmy nominations.
Well, thank you. Thanks for your support, as always.
You are welcome, Anthony. If you want to see this episode of Underground, I hope you do. Check it out this coming Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on WGN America. If you can't catch it at 8, don't worry. WGN America is going to repeat it several times over the course of that night. shortly after 9 o'clock. The end of the show does run over time, and also shortly after 10 o'clock, it's normal time. And if you haven't seen The Second Seal Underground, do. It's marvelous, not just for A.J. Hines' performance as Harriet Tubman going into this special episode, but also John Legend as Frederick Douglass is another thing to watch, too, as well as the rest of the cast and the writing and directing. It's all taking a gigantic step up. If you want more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.wgnamerica.com. It's www.wgnamerica.com. And once again, American Crime Show will be coming back next year. I believe they'll have either one or two versions, the Hurricane Katrina version and also the Gianni Versace version, which, by the way, was announced earlier today by FX. That Ricky Moore will be playing the partner of Versace in that series, which will be the third season of American Crime. It's going into production in a few weeks. Anthony Hemingway, thank you again for joining us. I apologize for the breakdown early on that after the bottom of the hour. All the very best to you, Nisha, Joe, the cast, the crew of Underground. I hope a lot of people check out Wednesday night's episode. I think they're going to be in for an incredible experience. And congratulations to you and Aisha
awesome.
And everybody involved for making it happen.
Thank you very much.
You are welcome, Anthony, and you're welcome back anytime. All the greatest. Take care.
You too as well. Take care. Bye-bye.
Anthony Hemingway, the Emmy-nominated executive producer and director of Underground American Crime Story, joining us live from Los Angeles. Once again, Underground, a very neat episode with Aisha Hines' one-woman performance as Harriet Tubman this coming Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific on WGN America. If you missed that hour, it is repeated throughout the night. This Monday on Marvin Televised, we'll focus on two programs that are happening next Sunday. From The Leftovers, going into its third final season on HBO, the creator and executive producer of that Peabody-winning program, Tom Parada. And from The White Princess, the follow-up to the Starz miniseries The White Queen, writer and showrunner Emma Frost. And then next Friday on this program, my lead guest will be the celebrated actress, singer, songwriter, Mia Maestra. You may know her from Tango, The Motorcycle Diaries on television, opposite Alias with Jennifer Garner, on The Strain the last couple of years on FX, and now a guest contributor to the new series Outpost, currently running on weekends in English on Fusion, in Spanish on Unimax, both owned by Univision. Mia Maestra joins us this next Friday, 3:30 Eastern Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. If you came in late on today's program or you want to catch up on episodes you wish, we make it very easy for you, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's www.talkradio.com/televised. You can also check us out this weekend on podcast. That's at iTunes.com. This episode and all of our episodes, recent and beyond. And remember, you can download those podcasts to your smartphone or tablet, take us on the go, wherever you're going, this weekend or beyond, and share it with others. Spread that love. Once again, Tomorrow We Televise podcast on iTunes.com. And our program and other Blog Talk Radio shows are also available on the iTunes Podcast app. That's the iTunes Podcast app. Remember, if you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or order it online. But as always, we want to hear from you. What do you think about our guests and topics today? And as always, what's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it is headed? So get those thoughts in. I'd love to hear them and respond. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to include your name and where you're from. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, we always appreciate what you have to say. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not through those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Till is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of this very enterprise are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televise was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Audible transforms the way you hear the world. We'll give the last word today to Don Rickles, who passed away yesterday at the age of 90. At the close of many a concert he gave, many a performance he gave all over the country and all over the world, he had the following to say to his audience. You can hear what he had to say on his wonderful album, Hello Dummy, that is still available on albums and also on CDs. And I'm paraphrasing what he had to say. It went something like this. God put us on the earth to laugh. So who cares about bigotry and morons and nonsense? Let's relax and enjoy ourselves while Almighty God gives us time. Will Rogers once said, I never picked on a little guy, only big people. And all of you tonight are really big people. And I do thank each and every one of you. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Don Rickles, for all the great humor, all the great performances, and for impacting each and every one of us. Have a great weekend. We'll be back Monday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.